Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like? This is the Overton window at work. The idea, coined by the Mackinac Center's Joe Overton, describes the range of ideas that are politically acceptable at any time. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at issues as they go from being impossible to plausible to policy and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. Now, if you've ever tried to make a difference in politics, you might be confused about where to start. So today I'm going to talk about just that with Kevin Rinke. Kevin is a political activist, a podcaster, and a former governor or former candidate for governor in the state of Michigan. Kevin, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
How'd you get involved in politics?
My whole life, I hated politics, to be candid with you. And there were two events. One, my first involvement was in Colorado, and there was a very attractive young lady that I wanted to date, and it turned out that her mother was Gerald Ford's private secretary, and I became Gerald Ford's personal aide for a period of time. That was my first step into, that was 1979-80, post-presidency.
Okay.
And that was my first step into politics, and then the 22 gubernatorial election. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, or was it 20? It was 20, actually. Mm-hmm. 22. Yeah. Thanks. I should know that. But it's all a blur. And in that particular instance, my son was listening to me complain about things in Michigan and expressing a concern about the quality of the candidates. And when I say that, I want to be perfectly clear. Everyone who ran against me was a good person. Mm-hmm. Quality of candidate is up for debate. And I was expressing dissatisfaction, and he looked at me and said, "Dad, why don't you run? Why don't you fix it?" Mm-hmm. And I looked at my wife, and she said, "Well, you talk about it all the time. You might as well do something about it." And that's how I got involved.
Okay. That's two different time and places.
Yeah.
What's changed in politics over that time?
You know, politics, very interesting. When I worked for President Ford, every Friday we would have a private lunch with Tip O'Neill and his personal aide. And neither one of the aides were government employees. And we were the only people allowed in the room to take notes for the conversations. And I can tell you that it was productive, because while you had a Republican and you had a Democrat, they had the best interest of the state and the country in their hearts, and that showed, and they were willing to sit down. And candidly, we would come out of each one of those events with a broad idea of five issues that they were both going to agree on, mm-hmm. five issues that they were going to disagree on, and five issues that both of them would control their respective parties because they weren't in the best interest of America. They would lock things up and prevent the five good things from being implemented, you know? So I think that today's politics are so partisan in nature, and we're reaching a breaking point because people aren't representing their constituents or their state or their country the way I believe they should. They're following a party or an issue, and they demand compliance for a vote. And that's really not how the system is supposed to work.
Yeah, so that's been a major change that I've cared about, because we try and do our best to work with people who are progressives, people on the other side of the aisle, because that's, you know, especially in divided government, you need people to agree with you who aren't normally going to agree with you.
Sure.
But I find that it's been much more cross-ideological than bipartisan. What I mean by that is, like, there are some people who have different values, different ideas, but we're going to agree on housing policy or business subsidy issues, and we're not going to agree on much more, but we can work together with them. But when it comes to partisan issues, it's like maybe they can get some people on their side, but it's tougher because the zero sum nature of of politics. It's like, while we should be able to agree on these issues, if we pass this law, it might make Republicans look better than Democrats, and we can't have that.
Yeah. I think this, that I believe that if you take both ends of the political spectrum, that those people, if they sat down in a room, would agree on probably 80% of what goes on in America. I think as you move off the extremes, that number goes up to 90%, maybe even 92%. Those are wags, okay, as far as the percentages. But with that thought in mind, I do not believe that government in Michigan is serving Michigan well. And if they focused on the 92% that they could implement to move the state forward versus the 8% that is divisive, that the media loves to utilize to separate people, that we would all benefit. And, you know, I look at it instead of partisan and nonpartisan issues, I like to say, is it right or wrong? And I'm not a gray person. Forced choice, it's either right or it's wrong. And it's representative of the majority, which is how our country is supposed to work. Even though we are a republic, not a democracy, the majority of the citizens of a state or a county or a city usually should carry the day to move those people forward.
Yeah, so this has been one of my kicks for a while. At least the difference between this is, at least the way that I put it is, our state is supposed to be a republic that is at the center of its core. The reason for its being is to benefit the public, broadly understood. And democracy is the way that we're trying to figure that out. So I hope that works. While you've been engaged in politics, though, what are some of the issues you've cared most about? What are those 90% things, yeah, if you like?
So I think that there's some simple things that everyone should agree on. One is education. And I'm going to use Michigan as an example. We are failing in public education. How do I identify or quantify the word failure? We just did some tests for our third graders in Detroit, and 17%, or another way of saying it, 83% of the kids could not read. 17% could. As we sit here and look at last year's group of children across the state of Michigan, there's 386,000 Michigan children that are considered illiterate in our public schools. 386,000 that are illiterate. We graduated 50% of our seniors and sent them to college, and they couldn't read above the eighth grade level. If you can't read, you can't succeed in life. You can't do arithmetic. You can't write. You cannot function in society. You become a victim or a ward of the state. So education is critical. And on a national level, the numbers are almost as bad as Michigan. We're sinking really quick, which we should not be proud of. Taxation. And government has become consumptive of the citizenry. In fact, it's the fastest growing business in Michigan, and maybe the fastest growing business federally. When we look at small business versus big conglomerates, international companies coming in and controlling marketplaces and dominating those marketplaces. So I think that taxation is very, very interesting. If you can't read and you work in these service-oriented businesses, the international corporations dumb things down, which lower income opportunities, which don't benefit like we used to see in Michigan, small businesses. And we were a manufacturing state. Today, we are an assembly state. An assembly state is a dumbed-down version of manufacturing. What do we lose? The intellectual side of it, but we also lose the income side of it. When we look at big companies in Michigan in trying to bring Michigan back, what do they consider? Well, they consider the workforce. They consider the taxation. They consider the regulation in those environments.
Basics.
Yeah, really simple. And Michigan has a low-quality education. It has a very high cost because of unions that are strangling many businesses, strangling them, and forcing them to leave the state. We have high taxation. We have high energy costs. And our fastest growing demographic in the state is 65 and older. Mm-hmm. So the communities for young families to move
10 million people for a generation.
Yeah. And
whereas the rest of the country is growing.
Yeah. And what do we do? We try and, what do politicians do? Not we. They try and massage numbers so they can say, well, look, we're making progress. I love Michigan. I can see areas where good things are happening. But at the end of the day, because I'm a business person, not a politician, I look at managing the state by exception. And I focus on the areas that we are failing. You're already getting paid to succeed. You're already getting the benefits of that success. Of course, we want to expand the base. And the only way we can do that is by actively and aggressively addressing the issues and the problems.
So let's go with, stick with education.
Okay.
You told us things are going bad.
Yeah.
What are you doing about it?
What am I doing about it? So I have actively been going around the state. I participate with a group called Beyond Basics, mm-hmm. and it is a phonics-based tutorial system that has had tremendous success. And in fact, when I talk about fixing education, how's this? I can get 92% of all the kids in Michigan to read at grade level or above in 36 to 42 months if we apply the theory and the methodology that Beyond Basics offers. How do I know that? Look at the history of Massachusetts in the reading program that they implemented, direct one-on-one tutorial-based phonics training. We have 11 school districts that received a grant that hired Beyond Basics. Isn't it fascinating that those 11 districts across socioeconomic huge differences, okay? And those are the top 11 reading literacy districts in the state of Michigan. We can take our seniors, and remember I said earlier, 50% of those kids can't read at the eighth grade level. In 10 weeks, we could improve their reading skills under this program by 2.5 to 3.5 years or more. And yet, because it requires a third party entity versus saying, well, we'll certify our teachers mm-hmm. to do it, we don't implement it. Politically, it scares people. They get results and they're willing to stand on their results and they provide value. And oh, by the way, they're actually revenue neutral. We could implement this into the state. Who's going to push back? The teachers union. Teachers aren't bad people. Some of them are great. Some of them are bad, of course. That's true in any business. They want to be successful. And we can improve so many of the problems that manifest themselves simply by having literate children.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I want to get back to this. You've got a solution to fix the literacy problem.
Yeah.
There is a real problem there. We're not doing this. Isn't that what the Department of Education was supposed to be doing? Like, or the Board of Education of saying, here are some best practices, you guys should do them. You know, maybe we'll tie some strings to state funding. Yeah.
So what a lot of people don't realize is there are national companies that sell curriculum packages. All right.
Sure. There's a salesman for everything.
And those national companies put together very liberal politically based versus educationally based curriculum that go from kindergarten through 12th grade. And interestingly enough, as literacy has become so prevalent since COVID, they couldn't hide anymore. You know, parents who thought their kids could
literacy
read.
Literacy problems, yeah.
Yeah, literacy problems. All of a sudden, they were teaching their kids at home, and they knew their kid couldn't read. They were shocked. They're angry about it. But what do these national curriculum companies now sell? A certified phonics program. Teachers are not going to be the providers of the solution in this case. We need third party that can be fired if they are not successful, that is forced to report on a monthly or quarterly basis, that lives up to the commitment of 92%. And by the way, that would make us the number one state in America from a reading literacy perspective. And I ask everybody in Michigan, why wouldn't we be number one?
How'd you get involved with the Beyond Basics?
Years ago, there was a fundraiser that a buddy invited me to. And it was compelling. At the time, they focused on the inner city. And what was so compelling was that it dispelled all of the excuses that I had been hearing, that, you know, single parent kids couldn't read, that minority kids couldn't read, that economic dollar income in a household could be correlated to reading efficiency. And it's all bunk. It's all smoke. Everybody can read. And I believe that it's incumbent on giving every kid an equal and fair opportunity to succeed in our state and in our country. And the only thing that's required to do that is to read. You tell me, what high income job can you do if you can't read?
There's a Niagara of words that are coming across our faces, and much of it's the written word. I can't imagine living in the modern society, in the modern world, without being literate.
And if you are illiterate, what are you a prisoner to? Government. It's a way to control a big percentage of the population. That's my belief. Otherwise, we'd be doing something about it.
That sounds kind of extreme, right?
I'm extreme on accepting excuses when it comes to kids being literate. Mm-hmm. It's a problem we can solve at 92%, and we choose not to. And I'm not willing to accept that.
All right. So you're involved with this group. You've got these districts. I assume you're trying to make sure that this is a group that gets involved, that's able to work with more districts. Yeah. You said you've got, you know, some people standing in the way. Every school district will have an objection to something. You said that, and part of that is convincing them otherwise, but.
Well, interestingly enough, the assistant superintendent of Detroit Public Schools wants to implement it into every school in Detroit. How come it's not implemented? Every school that we have been in wants them back and wants to expand the program. We have to allocate resources and actually demand that the program be applied. It's better than Head Start. It's better than several of the other programs that are somehow new shiny coins that they've been sold through these national corporations that don't work. We got to get it done.
So I know about this because I've been listening to some of the stuff that are some of the work that you've been doing. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I have noticed is that you get in front of a lot of crowds to talk about this.
Yeah. During the campaign, this last presidential campaign, on my own, I did 111 events, either filling in for the Trump 47 team to sign up delegates and to promote candidates, or simply going to different entities that I had been exposed to when I ran for governor and said, look, I want to keep talking about these issues because in my heart, I believe that these are the right issues. There's nothing in it for me. Nobody's paying me for this. I'm here simply because I want you to know what the issue is, to understand that a solution exists, and that if you choose to get involved, you can help create that solution. I think that's very powerful. And that's really what the people of Michigan need to do. They have to find issues that they believe in that benefit everyone.
So what does getting in front of a crowd do for this issue?
Well, in most cases, and I live in Oakland County, I'll give you an example. I would give a talk on reading literacy, and a lot of moms would say, that doesn't apply to my kid. You know, my kids go to this affluent school or that affluent school. I was given a speech over in the Grosse Pointe. And when I graduated in 1979 from Grosse Pointe High, it was the number one high school in America, rated by that national rating agency, with the highest literacy of any high school in America. Today, it's 127th. Only 52% of the kids that graduated last year from Grosse Pointe could read at grade level. It is an epidemic that affects all of us. And getting people to say, you know what, it may be my kid, that maybe, just maybe, I need to check, because it's fixable. Again.
So I guess you're showing them that there's a problem. You've got some type of ideas that just are going to resonate with people. You're going to surprise them, I think, is what I'm hearing about, like what you can do in front of a crowd.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm providing a solution. And I'm not a guy, I'm not smart enough to figure out how to create these fancy solutions. I look at things that have worked in the past, and how do we take the things that worked in the past when America was the highest educated nation in the world? And I think, what do we rank now? 70th in the industrialized world for education.
I've seen some of those PISA scores. I think that's the international standard. Yeah.
They're awful. And here we are, so arrogant that we think it couldn't happen to us. Well, it has. So let's fix it. Let's take the things that got us to number one previously and modernize them to today's standards. What do I mean by that? You can take one-on-one phonics-based tutoring and interface it with artificial intelligence programs that the kids can access on the laptop that they get now in their schools, or the iPad that they get in their schools. So there's support built into the program that didn't used to exist. Don't have to take them to a library, although it's interesting that comprehension goes up over 50% when children are taught with books versus computers. So why are we trying to eliminate books and institute more computers in our schools at a much higher expense, by the way, than looking at how do we get kids to be able to comprehend?
So just thinking about the Overton window on this issue, Your solution is well within the Overton window because it's getting implemented by a number of districts.
Yeah.
But it's also not quite policy yet. What's it going to take to get it from where we are to where you want it to be?
Well, that's a hard pull, because I am critical of the administration of the teachers union, and the cost for administration of our public education's union has skyrocketed over the last 20 years, skyrocketed, while the number of teachers has remained stagnant and the number of kids have actually declined. The only thing that's gone up is how much it cost and the number of administrators. You know, when we study, obviously, statistics and dynamics are very important. I've looked at other states that are doing better. Michigan has hundreds of school districts. We have 83 counties. We have hundreds of school districts.
549. I know, because I used to have to call them all.
549. I believe the state of Florida, which scores considerably better than Michigan in their reading literacy numbers and their math numbers, I think has 17 school districts. Now, the teachers union is going to fight like hell to say, we need all these individual school districts. I don't care how many school districts there are as long as they perform. And sure. If they don't perform, then I do care.
Mm-hmm. Now, yes, I do think there's probably some efficiency gains that can be had. But if you look at where some of the worst performing schools, it's honestly, it's the big ones.
Yeah.
So there might be some ideal in between. But I do think that it's important to note that in Michigan policy right now, the teachers union gets a huge say in how education is administered. And normal people don't have that big of a, as strong of a voice. They don't have as much of a vested interest.
Well, the teachers union has enough say that when parents come to school district meetings, their thoughts, ideas, and requests are being ignored because they have the teachers union has the power of the purse. Think of it this way. We're going to agree that there's 30 kids per classroom, and the teachers union says we need to lower the number of kids per classroom. Despite the fact
17 is the average in Michigan. When we looked at the numbers, 17 kids.
But the MEDC says there's 30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the educational department, not the business giveaway department. So think of it this way. If there's 30 kids per classroom, and what is the dollar amount that we just approved? I think the average comes out to about $21,000-$22,000 per kid.
And so I looked at this too. The total amount of spending, so it's not the foundational allowance, right. It's everything from local government or local property taxes to federal grants, $23,700 per student in
the state
of Michigan right now. Yeah, I only
have that. I'm going to digress for a minute, James, because I know that if I threw the numbers out there and they weren't correct, you're a numbers guy, and I appreciate it. So I'm trying to prove that I'm not exaggerating when I use these numbers. I'm actually going to back it off to $15,000 in 30 kids for my example. And remember that the average teacher salary is $70,000 a year in Michigan. If you take per classroom 30 children, with $15,000 per kid, that's $450,000 per classroom in your school. Subtract $70,000, you have $380,000.
And the $70,000 is teacher compensation.
Yes. Yeah. $380,000 per classroom that goes to what? Buildings that don't help our kids read? Football fields that don't help our kids read, administrators that obviously are not succeeding at having our kids read. All I care about is results. You know, some people say, oh, you got to put the money on the kids' back. If that provides the 92% result, so be it. But that's not, I want the 92% result. Mm-hmm. I'd rather that the teachers in Michigan get the 92% result so we can move on to the next problem and solve it. How we get that result is what's important to me. The issue and the implementation, and it's going to take a third party, and that's what scares the teachers union. An accountable third party that says, look at the results we're getting doing what you said wouldn't work, or what you say you need more money to do when we don't need more money. It's not a money problem, but the union would like you to think that.
Yeah. Again, you said there is opposition for this, but there also has been success. As you've demonstrated that this program is in a number of places in the state of Michigan already. It seems like the biggest thing in the way is salesmen, as in someone
actually,
out.
It's politicians.
Really?
Yeah. Because the parties can't agree They are more interested in protecting entities or trying to manage dollars than they are in getting a result. I'm about getting the result. Okay, I can make it revenue neutral and I can get the result. All they have to do is implement it.
How do you make it revenue neutral when you're clearly paying a company to do something or a group to do something?
Take, for instance, this last budget. There is over $400 million of unapplied money that can be doled out or utilized just at my first glance. So traditionally, when you look at budgets,
this was the extra contingency fee.
Fee money. There's lumped in with the food program. There was an extra couple hundred million dollars. Okay. I thought that it was interesting that in one night, one of the programs to help mothers with their children went from $100 million to $250 million in the final budget that was approved.
Well, let me say, I'm following you there, as in, like, there's education spending in the budget that would be less effective than this. Let's go from less effective to more effective. You don't have to spend anything more.
Well, education spending means we should educate people. Mm-hmm. And if we're not educating them, then we need to really address the problem. It's that I'm no rocket scientist. I'm a simple guy. Mm-hmm. And this will work. You know, it's no different than when we shift from education to the next area that Michigan needs to become aggressive with, and that is personal income tax.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you transitioned to that, because that's the other thing that I wanted to talk with you about. You've been outspoken that Michigan needs to get rid of the personal income tax.
Yeah.
That's a big ask.
Why?
Because it brings in $15 billion to the state of Michigan. It's our second largest tax.
Yeah.
Behind the property taxes. And every spending interest in Lansing gets paid by that. And a lot of times they're doing good work for the public.
So help me understand this, James. Every state that eliminated personal income tax, their revenue collection went up.
Well, there's only one state that ever got rid of its personal income tax.
Never implemented.
Of them have never been implemented. But this is one of the things that is underappreciated in American states, is that we add taxes, we don't get rid of them. That was the case until Tennessee got rid of its income tax over the past 10 years.
I'm actually going to argue that point, though, with you. There's more than just Tennessee. And Tennessee just repealed their personal income tax in the last year. There have been several states that had income taxes or similar taxes of a different name, that when they eliminated them, their tax revenue went up. And take Michigan, for instance. You're talking about whether or not it's $12 billion, $13 billion, $14 billion. Personal income tax is 4.25%, right?
Mm-hmm. Every dollar you earn.
Right.
Give
the average collection per citizen is about $2,500 per citizen. So every household, $5,000, right?
Something like that.
Average numbers. Okay.
At least that sounds ballpark.
We're close. Yeah. So for example purposes, what is usually true when we tax people less, and there is an example that has been utilized since the days of Ronald Reagan called the Laffer curve, which exemplifies what I am and magnifies the efficacy of what I'm saying, that says if you tax people less, tax revenues go up because people will choose to spend their money how they wish. In Michigan's case, our sales tax is 6%. It's why we wouldn't have to increase taxes by eliminating the personal income tax, which is at 4.25%, because all the data shows that if you give people back $5,000, they're going to spend it, which helps our economy, which helps our local businesses, which helps in so many different ways. But what we have is a problem in Michigan. See, because we tax, and we've created all these tax silos, and let's describe it as a series of buckets. And I happen to believe that when government collects a tax, that dollars should be able to be spent in any of the buckets, not restricted. Okay. People love to say, oh, the gas tax and all the money went to the roads. Well, it didn't go to the roads for years. Lansing BS'd everybody. And now we're uncovering just with a minor tweet, and I give Matt Hall credit, we somehow found $1 billion of unapplied gas tax money that will now go to the roads in this last budget. And that's been going on for how many years? While we've had bad roads. And what happened? We had to increase taxes to pay for these bad roads while there was hundreds of millions, or in this particular case, $1 billion that wasn't being applied. So we have taxes that go in a specific bucket, and that bucket's overflowing. And the bucket to fix this set of issues is empty. What does government have to do? They have to raise taxes, even though the other bucket's overflowing, because they're not allowed to take those funds.
Yeah. So I think when I started, the state of Michigan's budget was around, or sorry, just the amount of revenue generated by the state, by the state's taxes, was around $24 billion, something like that. And now it's approaching $50 billion. And, you know, you can adjust for inflation. It's still up. It's not up, you know, massive amount. That's allowed lawmakers to accomplish a lot more the stuff that they want to do. But I do want to challenge you is that I think you're absolutely correct that if you eliminate the income tax, people are going to spend more and you're going to collect more in sales taxes and all the rest of the state's taxes, too. We've got use taxes, property taxes, business taxes. There's over 60 different ones. I think I'd have to look at the Citizens Research Council report.
Did you ever read that poem about taxes? I forgot the gentleman that wrote it, but it taxed me on this, taxed me on that, taxed me on living, taxed me on dying, taxed me on breathing, taxed me on trying. It's an absolute masterpiece of a poem. That's how government thinks.
Yeah. Well, but I want to say, like, that income tax is a big one, and I don't think that all the gains from eliminating, or sorry, all the revenue lost from eliminating the income tax would be sufficiently captured by the other, or economic growth in there generated by the other taxes. So you are going to have to cut. You would have to budget for less.
Okay, so let's concede that, and I'm not sure that we need to, but for example, for just conversational purposes, maybe what we should do is cut the income tax by 50% and not tax people below a certain household income level. Okay, so the high income earners could achieve a 50% tax cut, and some of the lower income earners wouldn't be taxed at all. Wouldn't that be great?
By the way, already policy, but only at 4,000, I believe, whatever the personal exemption numbers are.
Actually, against our state constitution, it is illegal to have two separate tiers of taxation in our state constitution. And interesting, because it's going to come up, the millionaire's tax that the Democrats are proposing to implement in Michigan. But on the low side, so what they do is they create exemptions. Really, all that is you're taxing people, and then you're finding a way to give them that money back.
Yeah.
I say, let's not tax them. So you don't have to get, government shouldn't take it and then give it back. Let them keep their own money.
Kevin Rinke, famous progressive.
I wouldn't say that I'm a famous progressive. It's common sense.
Fair enough. And I think that is kind of the way that it is, because I think if you look at the, if you look at the political feasibility, acceptability, where people are, I think people are okay not taxing poor people, even if we are supposed to have uniform taxes that fall equally on everyone. But I guess the bigger question is, on this issue, what are you doing about it?
Well, once again, I've worked with Art Laffer, and I have worked with his partner, Steve. And Steve wrote the Trump tax cuts, which have been wildly successful for every level of American. every level have benefited from the Trump tax cuts. And what we need to do is make sure, it's Steve Moore, by the way.
I was following you. By the way, when I first started at the Mackinac Center, he came and gave a talk when he was working, just getting the Club for Growth out. So yeah. I've known about him for a while.
Yeah, both guys are brilliant. And again, we're at a place where I think people want to feel that their tax dollars are actually being used efficiently and are getting a result versus the culture wars that the parties have created. You know, only the rich benefit. Not true. Simply not true. And so what I've been doing is I speak often to anyone who will listen. Because I find it offensive when a elected official, maybe in one of our larger city, comes out and says, we're going to give you $100 property tax credit this year because things are going really good in Detroit. We're going to give you $100 back. And people say, that's great. When they could be having
a check from the government.
But how about you don't have to write a check to the government and you keep $5,000 per household? That's real money. That's tangible. That creates value. We have to, with the way we calculate taxes, look at how we assess property taxes. And the Axe My Tax group is out there that wants to get on the ballot. The elimination of all property taxes. And I'll tell you, the elimination of the personal income tax is a hell of a lot more comforting to the legislature in Lansing than the elimination of property taxes. Mm-hmm. Man, you talk about unintended consequences and what a mess that would be. And everybody wants lower taxes. I have never met anyone other than who I might consider disingenuous at best that says, oh, I want to pay more taxes.
There, a number of states have a form that you can fill out on your taxes to pay more than you owe if you want.
And what's the utilization rate?
It's very, very low, but they do exist. And some people do. I really have to talk with them about that, but they do exist.
I applaud those people in their lunacy because until we eliminate the waste of government, and there is waste, there is fraud, there is abuse, until we fix that, I think we should freeze taxes across the state of Michigan. And, you know, Doge is very popular amongst the right and the far right as far as the term these days. How about just accountability? Just accountability. And right now is the cost of our government under Gretchen Whitmer, please correct me if I'm wrong, has gone up over 47% in 8 years. Of her being the governor.
Yeah, that sounds about right. There's been a lot more federal money, but since COVID, state revenues collect a lot more than they used to.
And there's a problem with that, okay? Because the state money and the federal money and the programs that they are being applied to are not 100% paid for. They're designed to pay a percentage of the cost of a program. And what happens is look at the program for the train in California that was over how many billion dollars?
Yeah. I mean, we're not building the high speed rail in Michigan.
We're not building but
we do need, we are going to need to build more power plants. We are going to need to fix roads fast and they fall apart. And yeah, so yeah, they're.
But my example is this, is that for all the money they received, it was never enough to complete the project. And we have all sorts of projects now that well-intended politicians voted for with money from the federal government that was limited in term and scope that will only build 20, 30, 40% of the project. And what are the people in Lansing going to be forced to do? Solve the problem. How did they solve that problem? They increased taxes. We need accountability, and we need to prioritize forced choice. It's ludicrous that we have a budget that's passed out to people on, you know, Tuesday night and voted on Wednesday morning, and that budget is 3,800 pages long. You know, we have, governor has line item veto. I guarantee you Gretchen Whitmer never read the budget. Guarantee you. Rick Snyder may have, because he was just a nerd and he'd sit down and I love Rick. I mean, that's the bean counter in him. If you gave my wife that budget, she would read all 3,800 pages. I would not. But certainly the people voting on it aren't reading all 3,800 pages. And they mark their success. This year's budget is $3 billion less than last year's budget. They did great, right? I don't think so. I expected more from my colleagues in the Republican House to demand. I expected more fight. And I understand. Applaud them for their wins. They think they got more wins than losses. That's not how spending the people's money should be. It should be right or wrong. It should be necessary or unnecessary. And it shouldn't have the tail of, will this help me get reelected if I do the wrong thing?
All right. Well, Kevin, good luck on your attempts to shift the Overton window.
Yeah, it won't be easy. And yet I got a hard head and broad shoulders. So people can call me crazy all they want, but there's nothing in it for me. And there's everything in it for the citizens of Michigan.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.